in the home 6010. Hello and welcome into Fantasy Focus Football. It is Daniel Field and Stefania here with you on this Wednesday, September 14th. Today's podcast presented by Geico. Switch to Geico and see all the ways that you could save. We have a jam-packed show in front of us today. We've got news, a whole bunch of news. We're going to get a lot from you, Stefania. We've got rankings talk that we're going to do, Field. We're going to invite our friend Liz Loza in to join us to talk about some Packers and Bears. But first and foremost, I just want to let you guys know, Field, I think you look really nice today.
Wow. Thank you.
But Stefania looks a lot nicer. I think you should start doing the guns too every once in a while. Can we do sleeveless days the way that Stefania does sleeveless days?
I would think not. I think that would probably lead to some interesting feedback from the people that are watching right now. But you know what? There's only one way to find out.
We should
try that tomorrow. Yeah. Tank top Thursdays.
Stop it. Don't tease me. You know that I'll do it.
Okay, fine. Sounds like a bet.
You know what? I won't be here tomorrow, so that way I won't intimidate quota. You.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah,
correct.
Ahead.
Yes.
Go
yes.
ahead.
Yes. I love that. Stefania, you're so great. All right. Listen, we got so much to get into. Let's just hit it. Oh, I hit the button. Sorry. News.
What do we used to have for our news drop again? Was it news or noise? What was it?
Instant replay?
Instant. Is that what it was? I can't remember what it sounded like. I'm getting old.
Yeah, I got this one. This is the old one that I'm hitting.
All right, no, it's not working right not now. Working. Great podcasting right here. Yeah. Talk news, huh?
Yeah, let's talk about Keenan Allen, Stefania, obviously. We're getting closer to Thursday.
We are.
Hurt his hamstring. Should managers expect to be without Keenan Allen? Should they be making different plans if they roster him?
Make different plans. He's not going to play. He said small possibly, which was my favorite the quote coming out of the weekend when talking about his chance to play. And the good news, Jeremy Fowler reported this yesterday, that the MRI showed no major structural damage. So on the spectrum of hamstring injuries, it's not a severe one, but it's still only a four-day window. He hasn't practiced yet. The smart move for the season, keep him out this week.
We're going to talk about the other pass catchers in this offense. I have some questions on them a little bit later in the show. Stefania, next one, Ken Walker. Mm-hmm. Looks like he's going to be ready to be able to come back. Really excited. We saw Rashad Penny look really good last week, but excited to see Ken Walker out here in week two.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to play. I mean, Pete Carroll's sort of been pumping up him running around and looking good, but I think the issue was really coming off of the hernia surgery. When can he take contact?
Yep.
And that is now going to be the case. I think everything's pointing towards him playing. Obviously, Rashad Penny got the lion's share of the work, 14 of 15 in the backfield touches, 38 of 55 offensive snaps. For the record, Travis Homer had the second most touches behind him, but Kenneth Walker, I think, will slot in there. I think if he plays, they're not going to hold him back.
Yeah, they'll let him go from that standpoint. All right, Field, another couple of running backs here. Damian Pierce, Lovie Smith says that they're going to work to get him more opportunities. Felt like last week there were plenty of opportunities based on the game flow, but how are you assessing Damian Pierce here heading into week two?
Well, so Daniel, if you listened to the coach speak going into week one, you would have thought that Damian Pierce would have a more pronounced role.
Yep.
He did not. So if you listen to the coach speak again this week, you think he'll have a more pronounced role. Who are you going to trust? Are you going to trust what Lovie Smith says or what we saw in week one? For now, I continue to believe that Damian Pierce remains a solid bench stash, but for at least one more week, and I'm going to discuss the value of Rex Burkhead in a little bit, I think week one showed us that suggestions are Rex Burkhead is the far safer play here in this Texans backfield.
Yeah.
This past week, not only did the Texans use Rex Burkhead a lot, but they had a positive gain script, which you would have thought would play into the favor of Damian Pierce. As I mentioned yesterday, they're 9.5-point underdogs going to Denver to play the Broncos this upcoming weekend. If that game plays out like Vegas expects it to, that could mean even more of Rex Burkhead and less of Damian Pierce.
I mean, Lovie Smith did say that, you know, in passing situations, they're probably going to lean more on Rex Burkhead, at least right now. And you would expect against Denver, they will be in passing situations.
Yeah, we'll have to keep monitoring Damian Pierce and his usage as we move forward.
Can I just say on Rashad Penny, by the way, is that like he was sort of a borderline. He was like a low-end flex play after week one because he looked solid, but not a ton of passing game utilization and only 12 rushing attempts. If Ken Walker comes in and plays a real role, then this could be back to where we were going into the season, which was both guys as like borderline flex plays as running backs. Because if they're splitting duties without either one of them getting major passing game work, it might be that you kind of find yourself in that weird, almost no man's land for running backs.
Yeah, that's a great point. We'll have to monitor that as we move forward. Field Stefania, another guy. Ty Montgomery was placed on IR with a knee injury.
Yeah, he actually came into the season with a knee issue coming out of the preseason. He was questionable all week. He was active, obviously. He got the score, but he only had five touches and then aggravated the knee, so now out for multiple weeks.
Yep. All right.
And at then least we got one. Four. Yeah, it could be more.
Could be more.
Yep. So that means that you would think Ramondre Stevenson stands to benefit the most in the passing game for the Patriots. What we don't know is whether the Patriots will have a third running back active this upcoming week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Names to consider include Pierre Strong, their fourth round pick out of South Dakota State, who can flat out fly.
Yep.
Also, J.J. Taylor is on the practice squad. We've seen him in small doses in previous seasons. But the door is open right now for Ramondre Stevenson, who's a really gifted pass catcher, to get involved. I'm not sure it's a perfect James White role for Ramondre Stevenson because he can do other things as well. But coming into the year, we talked about if Ramondre Stevenson gets passing game opportunities, you would think this injury to Ty Montgomery only bolsters the value for Ramondre Stevenson because of the possibility that maybe he does get three or four targets per game.
Yeah, absolutely. Stefania, anything else that you want to add before we move on from the news section?
Move on.
No, we're good. All right. Let's talk about some of those tricky 49ers that I, at least personally, I've had some problem ranking this week.
Okay.
And I want to dive into it, talk to you guys why. Trey Lance.
I mean, how do you evaluate after that game? It was a mess.
So when I look at Trey Lance, I'm trying to decide how high do I want to rank him this week? How high or how low do I want to go? I currently have Trey Lance as quarterback 8. I'm the highest of all of our ESPN rankers. Field, you have him at 10.
Yeah.
ESPN consensus is at 14. In week one, he was quarterback 28 with 10 fantasy points.
Yeah.
That game, like you said, Stefania, I'm throwing it out. The weather was awful.
A lot of it, yeah.
It was, the rain was terrible. Now, there were some good takeaways from it. And one of the things that I loved as a takeaway, he still had 13 carries.
Right.
When I look at what he has done in his previous starts, he had 16 carries in one of his starts last year, 8 carries in another one of his starts last year. Also, he came in at halftime last year when Jimmy Garoppolo was really struggling, still had 7 carries just in playing a half.
Right.
His rushing floor is so high that in spite of how bad he looked in week one, I am buying the fact that if his floor is 8 to 12 carries against a Seahawks team that, mind you, really pumped for them, huge victory, huge moral victory. They gave up 433 yards. Only 3 teams gave up more yards last week than the Seattle Seahawks, and you're going to give me Trey Lance, and he's going to have Elijah Mitchell be hurt. He might get another carry or two, and he's getting George Kittle back this week.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Maybe. That's why, for me, I have him ranked as a top 10 quarterback. I have him at QB 8 ahead of both Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and a couple of other quarterbacks because I think we're going to see Trey Lance unlocked here this week.
I have a 10. I'm a little bit more reserved because I agree with everything you said in terms of the rushing upside. What we still don't know about Trey Lance and what we've been talking about for a year and a week and a half so far is what kind of passer is Trey Lance, yep. Right? He was a problem. Problem might be too strong of a characterization, but it was a talking point during the preseason. It was not like he was out there flawlessly, precisely moving the passing game along. And if he doesn't do that again on Sunday, well, then there is certainly upside because of the legs, but there are so many good quarterback options, which is why I have him at 10. Again, I still have him inside. I have him as a starter this week, and I think certainly things bode better, but I'll continue to monitor the passing because if the passing does not get better, then the outlook does change here for Trey Lance, not just in fantasy, but as we all know, they've got a Jimmy Garoppolo waiting in the wings.
I also want to say this. Like, I love Seattle. That was the best game they're going to play all year long.
Maybe.
The Broncos fumbled twice on the 1 yard line. They severely mismanaged the clock and they still missed a 64 yarder to barely lose the game. Like that was the best game Seattle's going to play all year.
That's fine. You know, one thing about these NFC West rivalries is that it doesn't matter how bad the teams are. If you follow the NFC West as closely as I do, you can have a team that's in the toilet and they will come out and they'll win just to be the spoiler. And Seattle comes to the Bay Area for this game coming off a Monday night game. So 1 day less of rest.
Yeah.
49ers are angry.
Traveling west on a short slate.
No, traveling south on south, a short on week. Short. I know. No, but I'm just saying.
It's like a 12-minute flight, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is the most beautiful. Like, they had everything was perfect at home. They're riding high. And there's going to be a little hangover on Sunday.
Field, another guy that we're going to be watching out for now that Elijah Mitchell is out is Jeff Wilson.
Yeah, and so the conceit of the rankings conversation this year, in my opinion, is not necessarily like, oh, Daniel and I are three spots apart in a running back. Let's hash it out and figure out who's right or who's wrong. Three spots apart generally means you see the player pretty comparably. I'm looking for notable or interesting rankings conversations this season, and I think that Jeff Wilson Jr. is one. And here's the reason why. We know that Elijah Mitchell is going to miss up to 2 months. The 49ers did sign Marlon Mack to their practice squad. So while Tyrion Davis Price could be in the mix this week, as we know with Kyle Shanahan, like until a guy has proven it on the field in the NFL for Kyle Shanahan, we don't know exactly what kind of role or expectations we can have for that player. It's a long way of saying that I think Jeff Wilson Jr. will be the guy this week, and he will be a lot of the rushing attack this week amongst running backs. But there are a couple of compounding factors for Jeff Wilson's value, which is why I have him as running back 29, a low-end flex play as opposed to a potential top 20 option. 2 years ago, he finished the season with back-to-back games up over 20 points. He was a very efficient runner. Debo Samuel was not running the football, and Jeff Wilson Jr. was catching the ball a lot in those two games. Yeah. Last year when we saw Jeff Wilson Jr., he was a non-factor in the passing game. Now, I know he did not play a ton of games last year, but in 6 games, he had 8 targets. So not a lot of target share for Jeff Wilson Jr. last year. And of course, Debo Samuel, who had 8 carries last week, is now a big part of the rushing game. So while I do think that Jeff Wilson was a worthwhile waiver ad, I'm not totally sold that right out of the gates, he's a lineup lock and he's going to get you 20 carries and 5 targets in a game, which is something that we saw out of him 2 seasons ago. So I think he's a good player. I think this offense is going to find other ways to pick up ground game yards. You mentioned Trey Lance, Debo Samuel also vectors into the mix. So I've got Jeff Wilson Jr. as, again, a low-end RB3.
Yes, and Stefania, we're going to talk about, Phil just mentioned it. Every single one of these 49ers is sort of a dual threat with the way that they can utilize their legs. And Debo Samuel is someone that we really like again this week.
I know. We said it yesterday. There's going to be 3 main running backs for the 49ers, and it's going to be Jeff Wilson Jr., Trey Lance, and Debo Samuel. I mean, Debo Samuel had more carries this week when Elijah Mitchell was out. He had a... It's obvious. I mean, everybody knows the talent of Debo Samuel, but if you were just looking at the numbers from last week, you might be discouraged. He ended up wide receiver 31 because of his low production and fantasy points. He also had a fumble. If you saw the weather, you understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about it. I think he is going to be utilized every which way. And I talked about this when I came back from the preseason. Debo Samuel had a shortened training camp, right? Because he came in late because of the contract issues. And he and Trey Lance didn't get a ton of time to connect. But I think that that relationship is only going to continue to develop. And it's going to be a little bit enhanced now because Debo will be more involved. So I'm not worried about Debo. In fact, I really like him this week.
Yeah, the only thing that I would say, this is not pertinent to week 2. It's for the rest of the season. It's just like, again, I'll state this many times over. I like Debo Samuel when he's a wide receiver only more than I do when he's a wide back, because you look at the numbers. His efficiency was off the charts last year. 14% of his rushing attempts went for a touchdown. That's an impossible number to sustain. He had 81 targets in his first 8 games last year before he became the wide back. That would be brilliant and lovely. I don't think it's going to happen. He's still so talented and get enough target share. He's going to be a top 10-ish wide receiver, but he was the best player in fantasy for a 6-week stretch last year. And to get back to that level, I think is unlikely unless he somehow breaks the model of efficiency once again as a runner.
Yeah. Well, really excited to see what these 49ers do, because with throwing out everything in week 1, this really is going to be like the first test for me to be able to see. Yeah. What do they look like,
Daniel,
here?
It's a fact. And maybe Stefania either would feel strongly differently or just doesn't want to hear it right now. But if we wake up on Monday morning and the 49ers are 0-2, you know what the conversation is going to be.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
It's 100%.
Oh, it's already been the conversation.
Well, it's been at least been discussed. But after 1 game in the sloppy rain, like it's hard to pin all of the Sunday struggles on Trey Lance. If they don't win on Sunday, unless they lose like 45-42, which I don't think is going to be the case, it's going to be a Jimmy G conversation come Monday morning.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that works out. All right, we are going to talk about some more rankings in just a second. But first, we're going to pay some bills. Football fans, the first Sunday of the NFL season is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving new customers a can't-miss offer to celebrate the return of the NFL season. And right now, new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. And as an added bonus, everyone can experience the thrill of DraftKings early win promotion. It's simple. Bet on an NFL team to win if your team loses by 10 if your team leads by 10 at any point during the game, you get paid out instantly, even if your team loses. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FFF to get $200 in free bets instantly when you place a $5 bet this Sunday. That's code FFF only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. 21 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Tennessee. Call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. Bonus issued as free bets. One early win token issued to opt-in. Moneyline bets only. Deposit and wagering restrictions apply. Eligibility and terms at DraftKings.com/football terms.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Well, of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help, like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. You can even help with homeowners, renters coverage, plus add an easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
All right, Field Yates, let's talk about a couple of rankings. Rather than go through and just, like you said earlier, I'm trying to make sure this stands and doesn't fall over. Like you said earlier, Field, we're not trying to go back and forth and talk about, you know, when we're only a couple spots apart on players. We're looking at guys that were difficult for us to be able to rank, guys that we feel like we have some conversations around, right?
Well, early on in the season, especially when you're trying to use everything you thought for 7 months during the offseason and weigh that against everything you saw in week one, it makes for an interesting exercise. So there were some players that came to mind for us that were sort of interesting to develop a ranking for week two. So Daniel, you have your list right here, and it starts with Kareem Hunt of the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, my question is, how high is too high for Kareem Hunt?
Yeah, fair one.
So I'm looking at this. Week one, he was running back 4, 23 fantasy points, 70 total yards,
yep.
Had 2 touchdowns, right? Caught all 4 of his targets. The fact that he had 15 opportunities is fantastic. Nick Chubb obviously ran the ball more. I have Nick Chubb ranked higher than Kareem Hunt. But when I look at the rest of these pass catchers, there's nobody here that really does anything for me, especially with the way that Jacoby Brissett played in week one.
Mm, yeah.
So Donovan Peoples-Jones had 11 targets. I'm looking at Amari Cooper and Anthony Schwartz. They don't have good tight ends. I think that this team is going to run through these two running backs. And I think it's sort of similar to the way that the Green Bay Packers are operating right now, with the idea that Nick Chubb is going to be the guy that's going to get a lot of that ground usage. Kareem Hunt is still going to see it too, but he is a great passing game back. I have him as somebody that I think he's going to be closer to a top 20 running back on a weekly basis than he will be the top, you know, 30, where I feel like a lot of times this consensus is going to have him ranked.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I think he's a really strong flex option or a low end running back 2. And the reason why it's a low end RB 2 as opposed to a high end or even a low end RB 1 is because he found the end zone twice and caught all 4 of his targets in week 1. It's hard to find the end zone every single week. It's certainly hard to do it twice in a given week, especially back to back weeks. So, you're accounting for the possibility that he does not find the end zone again this week. I think the Jets are a more formidable run defense than what the Panthers showed this past week.
Definitely.
The Jets, I thought handled the Ravens okay for a good chunk of that game. Obviously, Lamar got them late. I kind of think he is close to what he was coming into the season, valued as the rare backup running back that you can actually play in your lineup. You're going to have a couple of sort of chunk weeks where he plays like last week and he finds the end zone twice. You're going to have a couple of weeks where Nick Chubb is still clearly the guy and he's only going to have 7 carries, only going to have 2 catches, and it's not quite as favorable. But I think if you went, as we've discussed many times, if you went either hero running back or zero running back,
yep,
Kareem Hunt is a reasonable player to have in that RB2 spot.
Absolutely. And to your point, tough Jets defense. I think that the Browns will actually have to rely more on their stars rather than some of the wide receivers that they have from that standpoint.
I was going to say, I hope they're not relying too much on the wide receivers based on how the passing game looked in week one,
that's
right?
It's all about the running backs for me. Another wide receiver player I had a hard time ranking, Terry McLaurin.
Okay.
This one was really tough for me. Week one, he was wide receiver 27, caught 2 of 4 targets for 58 yards and a touchdown. I'm going to be honest, he got bailed out late
with
a touchdown.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
He got bailed out late. So when I'm looking at Terry McLaurin, he was 6th on his team in touches behind Antonio Gibson, Curtis Samuel, Jahan Dotson, J.D. McKissic, and Logan Thomas.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's bad. Yes. And now here we are heading into week two where we watched those wide receivers and the rest of that offense be pretty efficient under Carson Wentz.
You said touches, right?
Sixth and touches. Opportunities.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So here are the reasons for optimism. A, he's Terry McLaurin, right? The guy's an absolute superstar. He did have that long touchdown. His average depth of target was nearly 19 yards down the field in week one. He's prone to big plays because he's Terry McLaurin, and he also had those six targets. He ran more routes than any other Commanders player in week one, so that's good. He's getting plenty of opportunity. He's playing on a near every snap basis, and it's one of those where things did not tilt in his favor in week one. And to me, it's probably just as much about randomness as it is about anything else. Jahan Dotson happened to find the end zone twice on five targets and three catches. Yeah. That's hard to do week over week. So I'm maintaining my faith here in Terry McLaurin because they paid him a ton of money. And they didn't do this. Is not one of the situations where they're paying him and they don't know how to utilize Terry McLaurin. I think that those target numbers probably even go up a little bit more this week because they play a team that they're actually an underdog against. For the first time, the Detroit Lions are a favorite. It's been 24 straight games, and right now they're actually a favorite, not an underdog. So a lot of points on the board here. I think McLaurin's still a solid wide receiver to play this week. And
me too.
I do have growing confidence in Curtis Samuel, I think if I had to choose one, it's once again Terry McLaurin. They could not have been used more dissimilarly in terms of the passing attempts that they were seeing. As I mentioned, Terry McLaurin's average depth of target, nearly 19 yards down the field. Curtis Samuel's average depth of target, 1 yard down the field. By the way, hat tip to Jared Smola. He's a great job if you haven't followed him on Twitter. I believe it's JD Smola, S-M-O-L-A. Has tons of data and useful nuggets that'll help you get your lineup set every single week. That is as different of usage as you can find for two wide receivers on the same team.
And I still have Terry McLaurin as my wide receiver 16. He is a wide receiver 2 for me, but there's a real question here for me. What if, seriously, what if, like, Jahan Dotson's a first-round talent. We watch him come up with two big catches. Curtis Samuel, to your point, is an explosive dual-threat guy. I get that his A-dot was way less. You know what he also had? He had 11 targets.
Yeah, that was
great.
You know
what Terry McLaurin didn't have? 11 targets.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my thought would be, if you don't utilize Terry McLaurin,
I have him as wide receiver 16. All I'm saying is, what if these guys that the Commanders have been waiting on, Curtis Samuel is a guy that they like.
Yeah.
They drafted a wide receiver in the first round. Antonio Gibson and Brian Rutt. Like, what if Terry McLaurin becomes more of a piece within this offense rather than just the number one superstar?
They drafted a first-round wide receiver. Then they should not have paid the guy $72 million this offseason. That's my thought. Like, the strongest sign that we have seen from the Commanders over the past 7 months towards a wide receiver is a record-setting contract that, if you pay him that and don't justify it on the field, then it's just coaching negligence is what it would be. I am going to keep the faith based off of that.
I have no comment on the faith that I have in the Washington Commanders.
That's fair. I'm not saying you're not going to be right. I just would hope that they would find a way to utilize him a ton.
You're hoping that. All right, I got two more guys, and they're both from the same team, Stefania.
Yeah, you take it. Yeah.
Mike Williams and Josh Palmer went last.
Let me guess.
No Keenan Allen. Yeah. So you're expecting there's going to be so much, right? There's going to be so much volume for both of these guys. We saw that last week, though. It was an obvious smash situation when Keenan Allen went out, and there wasn't a single pass catcher in this offense that had more than 4 targets.
There were 7 with exactly 4.
With 4 targets. So when I have Mike Williams, and we talked about this, if you draft Mike Williams where you drafted him, you just got to start him every week. And that's how I have him set up. Like, I'm
Mike Live Williams, by the sword, die by the sword.
Absolutely. I have him as wide receiver 19 right now heading into the week. I am really expecting more. I think my biggest concern outside of Mike Williams, because I think there's going to be some positive regression there based on last week, is Josh Palmer.
Yeah.
I really thought Josh Palmer was going to come on bigger last week, especially after that Keenan Allen injury. And he didn't. He did not separate himself from DeAndre Carter or Gerald Everett or any of the other guys there. When you look at what he did, 16.4 points per game in the two games where either Allen or Williams missed the whole game. Obviously, Keenan Allen only missed half the time, but you would have thought there would be more usage there with the way that he was coming in as the wide receiver 3 in this offense. So both of these guys, I have Mike Williams as a low-end wide receiver 2 expecting more, but I am nervous. And Josh Palmer, I have him outside of my flex option, which I think is crazy. I would have thought if there was no Keenan Allen at any point this season and the Chargers were taking on the Kansas City Chiefs where they're going to have to throw a ton, Josh Palmer would be an obvious flex play for me. Mm. And week one just has me I feel like I'm all up in a tussle because I don't know how to be able to figure out after week one what to do with these seven wide receivers with four targets apiece. Or seven players.
I was going
to
say, yeah, because there was a fullback who got a couple. Right. There was two tight ends who got four targets on Sunday for the Chargers. It was strength in numbers for them, which it worked.
If you listen to what Alex Smith said on ESPN Daily, I thought it was the perfect summary of this. He said, I don't think Justin Herbert cares who he throws it to.
Yeah.
He just doesn't care.
I want
like,
him
if
to
you're
care.
There, I know, but that point is like he will make use of all of his targets. He'll spread the ball around. He's seeing the field for like what's open, what's available, and he's not trying to get it to a guy. But I think the thing working most in favor of Josh Palmer is the opponent, which is Kansas City Chiefs. So I think there's going to be a lot of passing in this game. There's going to be enough to go around. We'll see.
I would characterize it like this. I too have Mike Williams as my top 20 for wide receivers. He's got way more risk than almost every other wide receiver in the top 20. As for Josh Palmer and DeAndre Carter, who, by the way, ended up seeing more targets and more catches from Justin Herbert after the Keenan Allen injury than Josh Palmer. Yep. Is that... They're both dart throws, but they're both justifiable dart throws in a deeper league. If you play in a 14-team league or a 16-team league, I think they are probably close to usable, especially in leagues that have three wide receivers as one of the default settings. In a 10- or 12-team league, I think if you're playing DeAndre Carter or Josh Palmer, it could pay off. You know why? Justin Herbert's the quarterback.
And they're playing the Chiefs. They're going to have to throw a ton.
And the Chiefs just play starting cornerback Trent McDuffie on IR. He's not going to play on Thursday night. It could pay off. There is risk, though, because things seem to be a bit more equitable in this Chargers passing offense than maybe we would have expected after just 1 week. And Alex Smith is correct. Justin Herbert's not concerned about making sure our fantasy lineups are satisfied. He's concerned about scoring points. And in week one, the guy had one of the best performances of any quarterback in the league. So far be it for us to tell Justin Herbert what he should or should not do.
Yeah, I think when I look at this field, is this a 425 game?
They play Thursday night.
Oh.
Yep, tomorrow night. So we'll talk about it more.
That's right. Yeah. Obviously. Yeah.
We'll play. This is a Thursday night game.
Thursday night game. So we'll have more on this preview tomorrow. Gosh. I believe it's you, me, and Mike on the show tomorrow. We'll preview the game. A lot of points expected on the board here. Those are names to know. But as much as even if you don't play Josh Palmer or DeAndre Carter.
Makes it worse. Sorry.
That's Thursday night game?
That is the Thursday night game because you don't have the luxury of being able to wait to see on. Like if this was a 425 game, right? The whole point would be. How did my lineup do during the Thursday night and the 1 o'clock games? Do I need a little bit more boom or do I need a little bit more floor from that standpoint? You don't get that luxury heading into Thursday night football.
But if you added one of those players on waivers, you might have done so not specifically for this week, but in the event that Keenan Allen doesn't play in week three or week four, who we'll see, right? All we know for now is unlikely for week two. And maybe what we find out on Thursday night is DeAndre Carter is clearly the number two wide receiver until Keenan Allen returns. And if you grab DeAndre Carter, you might have a useful piece in week three, perhaps week four and beyond. I'll get into mine now, shall I?
Yeah, dive in, Field.
So I'm just going to rip through a few names here that I thought were really interesting rankings conversations. And when he's the reigning back-to-back MVP, it's going to hit hard when he has a dud, as in 3.7 fantasy points. Of course, I'm referring to Aaron Rodgers this past Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings, who absolutely feasted on the Green Bay Packers. And what I think is worth noting is that no Packers wide receiver played more than 70% of the snaps. So it's not like anybody emerged as the go-to wide receiver. That was a question mark coming into this season. Romeo Doubs led the Packers in terms of catches, targets, and receiving yards. He had four catches, he had five targets, he had 37 receiving yards. Not a good stat line for your leading wide receiver. Perhaps most importantly for Sunday night against the Bears, is Elgton Jenkins and David Bakhtiari. Those are not fantasy names, but they're relevant in this case. Those are the two star offensive tackles for the Packers who are both out in week one, both have a chance to play in week two. If they have those two players, I feel much more confident in Aaron Rodgers. As of right now, I'm ranking him as if he'll have those two guys and Alan Lazard. I'll talk about him in just a minute. I have Rodgers as quarterback 8. This is a deference. This is a respect. This is a belief that Aaron Rodgers, back-to-back MVP, is not going to let two straight Sundays go by where he stinks. He's just not going to let it happen. And again, the Packers last year were awful in week one. They scored 3 points against the Saints in that game in Jacksonville because of a hurricane. I think Rodgers bounces back.
You know the difference, though,
in
week two?
I like your optimism, but he got harassed. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if he doesn't stay, we've seen when Aaron Rodgers is in trouble and takes hits, like if you go back, not last year, a couple injuries. I mean, part of the reason he's so good is he stays pretty clean, you know, and he can get rid of the ball quickly. If he's not getting that help to be able to do that, I just didn't like what I saw in terms of how much he was getting hit.
Well, again, that's why I mentioned the offensive tackles. If they're back on Sunday, then you feel much, much better about things.
I'm not sure that I'm totally confident they're back in like peak performance.
Okay. Well, we will see on both those two players.
And this is not, I know you said this is like a respect thing to Field as a part of, like, we've watched Aaron Rodgers do this for a really long time, right? Like, we've seen him be able to do this.
Yeah.
His wide receivers are awful this year. What you talk about last year, like, he had Davante Adams. If we're saying that Alan Lazard is the guy that's going to come in and be the savior for Aaron Rodgers, and listen, I liked Alan Lazard as a late guy to be able to grab, but that's not.
Daniel, you're talking about the guy that was having to defend his pick of Aaron Rodgers as a bust all offseason. So you're preaching to the choir here, right? I was down on Aaron Rodgers relative to consensus.
That's fair.
For one more week, I am going to keep the faith.
My best.
The only thing that Stefania could ask for more than Trey Lance playing well is that if Trey Lance does not play well, that the Packers get smoked on Sunday night, because the Jimmy G conversation will be quieted down a little bit because we'll be too focused on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers if they are 0-2.
You're not wrong.
We wake up on Monday morning. I'll rip through a couple more here because I want to get to Liz and, of course, Stefania's picks.
Sure.
What'd you say?
I think that was a dig, but I'm not sure.
No, I'm just...
I'm going to be worried about... I'm worried about all this Trey Lance, Jimmy G. I'm tuning that out.
Okay, fair enough. Rex Burkhead, we talked about at the beginning of the show. Damian Pierce, again. Yep. Lovie Smith, the same. We got to get him the ball more. I'm going to rank... Rex Burkhead, like, the superior option for this week, because every indicator that matters in fantasy, he had the decisive edge over Damian Pierce in week one. And while Lovie Smith is the head coach, I should also note he's a defensive-minded head coach, and oftentimes defensive-minded head coaches are very hands-off in terms of offensive personnel during the course of the game. That's usually a conversation that's between the offensive coordinator and the running backs coach. It was clear who they preferred in week one, and until proven otherwise, I'm going to rank Rex Burkhead ahead of Damian Pierce. I got him as a low-end flex play for this week because he is useful in the passing game, and I do suspect they'll be down big against the Denver Broncos. A couple more names here. Julio Jones, who we spent all offseason wondering whether Julio Jones was simply washed. And all of a sudden, Chris Godwin is hurt. And Julio looked good. Now, a couple of things to point out. I'm sure everybody watched the game, but if you weren't watching and paying attention to every aspect of the box score, not only was Julio Jones second in terms of targets amongst wide receivers for the Bucs, he had, I believe, five targets. He caught three of them for 69 yards. One of those plays was a bomb down the field from Brady. It was a beautiful throw, beautiful catch, and it was like, oh yeah, Julio Jones can still really run. He also had two designed rushing attempts, which normally when you're designing rushing attempts for the wide receivers, you're not looking for the old and slow guy to run the ball. You're looking for the guy who's good with the football in his hands. I don't know how many rushing attempts Julio Jones had last year for the Titans. I can't imagine it was many, but the fact that the Bucs entrusted him with two of those, a positive indicator for me. I've got him as wide receiver 27 this week. The biggest concern is that this matchup is very difficult. I have Tom Brady outside my top 10 for quarterbacks this week, as no team has played Brady better since he became a Buccaneer than the New Orleans Saints. And then finally, just to round things out, to go back to Alan Lazard, Spanya, do you expect him to play on Sunday night?
Too early to tell? I think it's too early to tell, okay. Although I do feel like the conversation was that he was trending pretty well. He just didn't do much in practice last week to put him out there.
So I've got him as wide receiver 36 this week, and it's weird to be saying this about a player that you have ranked as wide receiver 36, but there feels like an odd amount of responsibility on the shoulders of Alan Lazard this week, because while there were a couple of decent things in week one, and maybe if Christian Watson catches a 75-yard wide open, literally right in the breadbasket catch on the Packers' first play from scrimmage, we're talking about that game entirely differently. But coulda, woulda, shoulda, he did not. Maybe we're talking about this all differently. But Alan Lazard is kind of viewed in some circles right now as a potential savior for the Packers. I've got him as wide receiver 36. If he's not able to play a full game, then maybe that needs to be adjusted. But I'm going in. It gets Wednesday. We'll adjust these things throughout the week. So I'm going in with the possibility, at least the idea in mind, that Lazard plays more than 67% of the snaps, which was the highest Packers wide receiver snap count in week one, and that this offense gets back on track and avoids embarrassment playing at home against their longest rival, the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Stefania, I'll let it hand it over to you now. Your chance.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, it's funny because I was the last one to submit my names, and I was like, Mike Williams. Oh, taken. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Julio Jones was one of mine taken because yeah. I loved Julio.
I have more concerns on Julio. I'm already not going to be able to figure out where the end zone is, but that's just a separate thing. You stop.
Well, I mean, but you have him at 31.
Yeah. I do.
So you're not again, back worried. To our, how this conversation started, right? Like, we don't really see these players differently, nope. right?
High enough to be a low-end flex play for me. Yeah.
That is, you can retire that.
Well, so, I didn't want to put him inside the top 30. Yeah. That's why I meant 31, yeah. but high enough to be a low-end flex play for me.
Julio, he'll find the end zone. Mark my words. So I started with Hayden Hurst, and I really liked what I saw from Hayden Hurst this week. Now, obviously, he got more run as the game went on because T. Higgins went out with a concussion. We don't know yet if T. Higgins will be back this week. He's in the concussion protocol. We never know until it gets late in the week. But I think, you know, if T. Higgins is back, maybe you get less targets to Hayden Hurst, but he ran a route, we talked about this yesterday, in over 69% of their dropbacks. So I think that he is going to be a nice outlet for Joe Burrow. He also impressed me with the way he caught the ball, like confidently, mm-hmm. you know, that toe tap catch. Yep. Like, he looks really good. And we said this in the preseason that he was a guy who sort of had his job undercut by stars, you know, first at the Ravens, then in Atlanta. And I think he could have a reasonable role here. I'm not saying, you know, there are other, obviously, where you guys rank him 18 and 19, you know, he's not inside the top 10, but if you are looking for a tight end in a deeper league, I think you could do far worse than Hayden.
Totally.
Hurst.
He's on an offense that, in spite of the fact that they looked really bad week one, they're going to score a lot of points. Give me a dart throw at tight end like Hayden Hurst over a lot of other guys if I need someone.
Yeah, my next guy is Drake London, who obviously the rookie. We didn't see much of him in the preseason because he got his knee banged up and then he disappeared. And I think people might have been nervous about what would happen with him in the first week. He led Atlanta in catches, targets, and receiving yards. Yeah. So they're going to use him. Like, forget what the actual fantasy point production was. This is a guy that they're going to target. And they've made that very clear. So if you were worried about it, you need not worry about that anymore. Alec Pierce. Okay. I picked him just because I thought you guys are going to call me crazy. No, you're going to think
you're crazy.
I'm not saying he's a startable wide receiver necessarily this week.
Okay.
I am saying if you are looking for a guy to pick up, you don't even need a waiver to claim him. Mm-hmm. You can go find him in a deeper league.
After waivers run, don't waste your waiver claim.
Right. Don't waste your waiver claim. Here's why. People, if you were watching him, he had a big drop. It was unfortunate because, you know, big stage as a rookie. But I think they are chalking it up to rookie jitters. They loved him in camp. You know who his position coach is?
Reggie Wayne.
Yeah. Some of the best hands in the history of football. Yeah. And he loves Alec Pierce.
Sure.
I think, you know, people saw Paris Campbell and Paris Campbell hasn't been able to stay healthy, unfortunately. Look, Alec Pierce, I am so committed to Alec Pierce being a star. I think he's their number two wide receiver by the time the season ends. So go find yourself Alec Pierce, even if you don't start him this week. And then James Robinson, who to me is just a great story because of coming off the Achilles injury. We weren't sure that he would even make it to the start of the season. And then when we knew he was going to play, we weren't sure how much. And the Jaguars were planning on just sort of seeing how things went and letting the game come to him. Well, he played about half of the offensive snaps, did great, looked great. I think that more importantly, his snap share is going to increase this week. So get ready.
It was 50-50 in week one. So if it does, and I think that the way that James Robinson and Travis Etienne are sort of valued right now is you can kind of offset them because James Robinson is going to have more rushing equity and might get the better chance at goal line touches. Travis Etienne is clearly more explosive. I mean, he had a big play this past week.
And you'd expect that regardless, just based on where James Robinson was.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, even if James Robinson was fully healthy, like Travis Etienne's a unique dude in terms of explosiveness, right? He has more passing game upside. So I have Robinson ranked ahead of Etienne this week, but they're still in a comparable tier because the things that Robinson does well are offset by the things that Etienne does well and vice versa. More explosive player and pass catching upside versus the potential for more goal line work and more rushing upside with James Robinson.
I have James Robinson inside my top 30, so he's a low-end flex play for me. Travis Etienne outside my top 30 this week.
Let me ask you this. How many spots, like I see you have Robinson at 28. Is Etienne at like 39 or is he at like 31, 32?
I have Travis Etienne. That's a great question, Field. I have Travis Etienne at 31.
Okay, so you and I see it the same way then, right? 28 versus 31 is basically they're the same-ish level of player. Robinson gets the slight edge right now.
Based on what we saw in week one, totally with you.
I think that's
all right,
fair.
We're going to pay a couple more bills and be back with our friend Liz Loza. But first, Stefania, I'm going to talk about beer. Can I have you talk about shopping?
You can.
Yeah. Duh.
Waiting for the cha-ching.
Oh, it's happened. The cha-ching happened.
Oh, that sound makes me smile. It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business. So upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. Scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. I love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed from down the street to around the globe. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. Gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting of conversion rates, profit margins, and beyond. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is possibility powered by Shopify. Go to shopify.com/fantasyfocus for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/fantasyfocus, all lowercase, right now. shopify.com/fantasyfocus.
Football season is back, and man, do we have a good one for Thursday. Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, Miller Lite. Yeah, does it get any better than this? Spoiler alert, no, it does not. When it's Miller time, like tonight, right around kickoff, you know you're getting a great tasting beer that is both low in calories and carbs. Since 1975, Miller Lite has been a mainstay in the stadium, at the tailgate, and in your fridge. No matter how your team plays, it's the beer that's always a winner. And Miller Lite tastes like beer, because if you're a beer lover, you don't want watered-down flavor. You want the original light beer. Football season brings back the hits, so reach for the biggest hit of them all, Miller Lite. You can find Miller Lite pretty much everywhere beer is sold, or go to MillerLite.com/FFF for delivery options near you. It's Miller time. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. All right, coming back, and we're going to talk about Bears and Packers with our good friend Liz Loza. Liz, thank you so much for joining us. Really excited that you're here. How are you doing so far today?
I'm great. So I just started my day, and what a better way to start it than with all of you in this podcast.
Wow, that was a good
I'm
good
blushing.
Lead-in.
You can't see it, but I'm blushing. Liz.
I like your good shirt. I like the Frida shirt.
Thank you.
Big fan of Frida.
Heck yeah. All right, let's talk about Packers and Bears, Liz, and we're just going to start here. These Packers running backs from the jump have been the guys that we have been talking about all offseason long. Aaron Jones underperformed a little bit here in week one. How are you approaching Aaron Jones within this backfield here for Green Bay on Sunday night?
I would say he underperformed a lot. Here's what's most concerning to me. Aaron Jones was out-targeted by A.J. Dillon while the Packers were behind. That's not why people drafted Aaron Jones in the second round. They assumed that he was a circle of trust guy for Aaron Rodgers, who was developing with these new young rookie receivers, Sammy Watkins, etc. But regardless, the chemistry, the rapport there, something he had with Jones and not the rest of these pass catchers, we all projected Aaron Jones for what? At least 60 catches, and it's A.J. Dillon who's getting all of the touches on the ground, all of the goal line equity, all of the catches. Aaron Jones, by the way, just logged six or seven more snaps than A.J. Dillon. So heading into this week, you know, the Packers play the Bears. And right now the Packers are projected to be 10-point favorites ahead of the Bears, which still doesn't look great for Aaron Jones. That looks like a better position for A.J. Dillon. Now, I don't quite have it in me to rank A.J. Dillon just yet ahead of Aaron Jones. I have Aaron Jones in that like 15 to 16 range, but I do have A.J. Dillon just inside my top 20 at the position. You know, I was really looking at A.J. Dillon's touchdown equity here. And again, if we're assuming that this offense on a whole is going to run more frequently because of the lack of Davante Adams and aerial weapons, and the team is favored by 10, and it's an island game under bright lights, then we are expecting A.J. Dillon to perform in the red zone. In week 10, when he emerged last season after Jones was hurt, Dillon averaged 3.6 red zone touches per week, while Jones, after coming back, averaged just one per week.
Yeah.
So he tripled that number in the red area of the field. I think A.J. Dillon is going to be the key. And Kyle Sapi, Watch out. He's not going to be on my bench this week.
Hey, now. I'll tell you what. I'm with you here on this ranking. This one's going to be tough. Sorry, Kyle.
That's
sorry.
All right.
Sorry, buddy. Listen, I've been on AJ Dillon since the preseason, so I'm all in. And I was looking, Liz, I was curious because I wanted to know, did anybody rank AJ Dillon ahead of Aaron Jones here in week 2? Not yet. I have Aaron Jones at 15. I have AJ Dillon at 16. So I'm the closest between there, back and forth. But you've got them only 4 spots apart. We see a lot of this the same way with the way that we are breaking down this Packers backfield. I loved watching AJ Dillon be able to get the pass catching work that he got. To your point, if you're an Aaron Jones manager, you're not thrilled with that. But if you're not an Aaron Jones manager and you waited and grabbed AJ Dillon, maybe as your late RB2 in a hero RB kind of play, you're feeling pretty happy right now here in week 2. All right.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's talk about some of these pass catchers here in Green Bay, because we watched Alan Lazard drop a long 75-yard touchdown to start out week 1. We didn't see Alan Lazard in week 1 at all. The ghost of Sammy Watkins and Randall Cobb and whoever else happens to be out there catching passes. Is there only one pass catcher here, and is it only Alan Lazard?
I mean, we're going to find out, right? Like, that's going to be the key to all of this. And I have to say that Alan Lazard definitely played well in spots, but he also benefited from having Davante Adams on the opposite side of the field, right? So how many, like, the most impressive stat for me when looking back at Alan Lazard, at least last year, was that he had a top 9 catchable target rate of 83.3%. Well, when your quarterback is Aaron Rodgers, you're going to have a pretty good catchable target rate, you know? He like 5 or 6 catches of around 70 yards, maybe a touchdown is what I'm imagining from him. I have him ranked just in that end of my wide receiver 3, I think wide receiver 36 area. So like, could he catch 5 or 6 balls for 70 yards? Yeah. The touchdown would obviously vault him, but I'm not going to count on a touchdown again when we're talking about A.J. Dillon and possibly Robert Tonyan. And also, I mean, I think we have to have a little bit of a conversation about Aaron Rodgers, frankly.
Yeah. Okay. So before we talk about Aaron Rodgers, let's talk about Robert Tonyan. Do you like him at all from the tight end perspective this week? I mean, very excited to be able to see him back on the field. It looked like he was moving well, but ranked a little too low for me in most 10 or 12 team leagues here.
I think it's tricky because we obviously didn't see any tight end action against this new look Bears defense in week 1 with George Kittle absent, right? And I do think when we get to the Bears, we should talk about their defense, because Matt Eberflus is a wizard and he brought the magic to Indianapolis, and now it is in the Windy City. Maybe we should call it the Wizard City with Matt Eberflus like handling the defense. I'm pretty happy with him as a head coach. But I will say that my concern about Tonyan, now we have to also remember when Davante Adams wasn't available in, I believe, weeks 3 and 4 of the 2020 season, that's when Tonyan went off and managed 4 touchdowns. Is that sustainable?
Is that sustainable is the question. Technology strikes again.
I was going to say, when you asked, is that sustainable, was Liz referring to her internet connection?
I think
the answer is no. All right, well, we lost Liz there for a second. We'll see if we can get her back. But in the meantime, pick it up where she left off. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty. Oh, wait, is she back? Liz is back.
She's back.
That was fast.
She never left.
Oh, gosh.
Liz is sustainable.
You know what? I froze because you asked me about Robert Tonyan in the end zone, and I was like, oh, my God.
Stop it. Stop.
Please don't. But yes, so I don't know what you got, but Robert Tonyan in 2020, when Davante Adams was out for 2 weeks, managed 4 touchdowns. I think he is a red zone, a big red zone weapon for Aaron Rodgers. And let's forgive that 1 week back from an ACL, shook off some rust, had some really nice opportunities. And so I think that ultimately he could really provide some touchdown magic, but I don't know if you want to chase it.
Yeah, I think you're right from that standpoint. And a lot of this comes back to Aaron Rodgers, right? We're talking about these pass catchers, and we watched him utilize Aaron Jones and mostly A.J. Dillon from that standpoint in the passing game. When you look at Aaron Rodgers this week, I have him ranked outside my top 10. Field broke him down where he was at on him a little bit earlier. How are you approaching Aaron Rodgers here in week 2 after a really bad week 1?
So I think the key, I have him as my QB12. We also have last season's data when he opened the season against New Orleans, did not do particularly well. Also in that game, Davante Adams had a snap share rate of under 70%. Now we have a 0% snap share rate for Davante Adams. But I think the major key for Aaron Rodgers is going to be the health of his offensive line. Let's not forget that David Bakhtiari and Elgton Jenkins missed week one. They might also miss. I think Jenkins in particular is definitely going to miss week two's game against the Bears. So, and we know what a key Bakhtiari is for the protection of Aaron Rodgers and just frankly for settling him. And he is a guy who likes things. I wonder what sign he is. I got to look that up. But like, he is a guy who like definitely likes everything just right. And Bakhtiari is one of those keys for him. So if there's no O-line, I think there could be an upset, and that's why I will not give him a top 10 quarterback ranking just yet.
Yeah, I want to see one more week. If I'm being totally honest, the way he utilized the running backs, understanding the offensive line was rough, hoping to get those pieces back. But I need to watch him utilize these wide receivers because I love Alan Lazard. But if Alan Lazard is going to be the savior of this Packers offense, then I have some serious concerns about what Aaron Rodgers is going to be able to do. But hey, he's proven me wrong in the past. Maybe he'll do it again. Let's talk about your Chicago Bears. I want to start with Justin Fields. I think I'm the only one that has Justin Fields ranked this week. I have him as quarterback 18, and it is just because of that rushing floor. Even in spite of how bad the weather was last week, he still had five designed runs. I don't think that Green Bay is going to be, excuse me, the Green Bay Packers of old. And so from that standpoint, I still like Justin Fields. Again, this is late. We're talking in a 2QB league, super flex league from that standpoint. But I actually like Justin Fields and his ability to potentially utilize his legs more than I did in week one. Because again, I'm throwing week one out because of that weather game. I want to see more from him here in week two.
I think the weather actually helped him.
You think so?
Because it allowed him to do everything he does really well, right? There were a ton of design runs. There's also now some tape on that creativity for Green Bay. And while the Green Bay defense did not have the best week one outing, like that is a really stout unit. And the pass catchers at Justin Fields avail. Like, I love that everybody's on Mooney and that's great. And volume is going to work his way, but he is not an alpha. He is not a wide receiver one. He needs somebody else in an ideal situation working against him. And I'm sorry, but like Equanimeous Brown, Byron Pringle, they ain't it.
So where do you have Darnell Mooney then this week from that standpoint?
I think he's somewhere in my, like, just outside my top 25. Okay. You know, he's going to be, the volume is going to keep him afloat, but I don't think you're going to see, and he's going to get lucky, right? He is a speedster, and the two of them, it is worth mentioning, have been working on their rapport. They've been working out together all off season, and that's fine. But then the games start. And this is a primetime game for a young player facing at Lambeau. That crowd is loud. Like, this is a big spot. And so I am just tempering my expectations. I do think Mooney's, you know, will he draw 8 looks? Sure. Do I think he's going to convert on, like, 2/3 of those? I don't know. Like, I'd love to see him draw 10 targets, but I'm just not quite sure with the game script and, like, an over-under of, I think, 44. That's a possibility.
Yeah. We'll have to see. I really like, to your point, I like both Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet. I'd like them to be able to rebound from this standpoint. Darnell Mooney, we'll finish this up before we get to Cole Kmet. Darnell Mooney, I also have as a flex play for this week, but I'm nervous. There's reason to be nervous from it. And I like your point. I mean, he does need someone else on the other side. I want to see what this offense can do. But for Cole Kmet, Liz, I mean, there's only one place to go, and that's up. It's only going to get better from here. I am still buying Cole Kmet this week. Are you buying Cole Kmet here in week two?
Yeah. Yesterday, I told the sound guy, Gabe, at LA's sport. I did Sports Center, Los Angeles Sports Center, and he was like bombing me with Cole Kmet questions. I was like, I think we have to stay patient. However, here's the asterisk. He only ran 11 routes. Now, I just heard Stefania talking about Hayden Hurts, you know, route percentage. Hayden Hurst ran 43 for comparison, but let's even take Hayden Hurst out of the equation since T. Higgins got hurt. Like, Cole Kmet, yes, in the rain, but he only ran 11 routes. For context, TJ Hockenson in week one versus Philly ran 29 routes and recorded a route participation percentage of over 78%. That's tight end 12. I think that the TJ Hockenson to Cole Kmet comp, in terms of like what they're expected to do and the, maybe not the skill set of the quarterback, but the like maybe level of play of the quarterback is pretty similar. And if Cole Kmet is managing like a route percentage rate outside the top 40, I'm starting to get worried. Now, again, it's the rain, different thing, but I want to see that. I need to see him start running some routes and also, you know, showing some hands.
Yeah, from that standpoint, week one was tough because I wanted to see it a week earlier. Now we've got to wait one more week. We've got to go one more game into our fantasy season. And I'll tell you what, you got to win every game when it comes to the fantasy. Like, you can't just throw games away. And starting a guy like Cole Kmet, who had a zero in week one after not having any touchdowns last year, and we talked about how we expect him to have positive regression, you wanted to see it a little bit sooner. We'll see what happens here in week two. We both have him, Liz, as our tight ends 13 on the week. Last one here, David Montgomery and these running backs. 20 touches. He had 3 catches, 50 yards, 8 fantasy points. Again, really tough sledding in that game last week with all of the wetness. How are you approaching David Montgomery here week two?
I'm still pretty bearish on him, or bullish, rather. Sorry.
Wow. That was a Freudian slip. That was good.
I'm still pretty bullish on him. I mean, I like that he led all pass catchers in week one, right? Like, so we know that we don't have to worry about his role in the passing game. And he converted, you know, three of those four looks. I like last year that he was top 5 in red zone touches. He was top 9 in route participation as well for a running back. So again, he has that do everything skill set. The issue, I don't think, is really David Montgomery. It's how good Khalil Herbert has looked. And I do think that there's probably going to be a little bit more of a timeshare. But overall, this team's going to run a lot. And so I'm not particularly worried about David Montgomery, especially in the place where he was drafted, right? Like, he was, what, outside of the top 20 at least? Like, he's probably a low end RB2, maybe even an RB3 for some people, in which case I do think the goal line equity, even with Justin Fields vulturing at times, is going to be fine. He's still a massive piece of this offense. And so if anything, I do think Khalil Herbert is someone to watch, and maybe as the season progresses, you see David Montgomery wear, but this is a cold weather city. And I think also as the mercury drops, you're going to see this team run more and more, and that's only going to benefit Montgomery over the course of the season.
Yeah, I like that a lot. All right, Liz, thank you for that on Packers and Bears. Let's talk about some social questions to be able to close the show out. Kyle, do you have any social questions that you have that you can throw our way for us?
Sure do. We got tons of people in the chat. Always come in. We got
shout out.
Yeah, shout out to everybody in the chat. They do great. So many people. Daniel, I want to ask you, Cameron was offered A.J. Brown for James Conner and Juju Smith-Schuster. He's a little light on receivers. You taking the deal or passing?
A.J. Brown for James Conner and Juju Smith-Schuster. I would need to know what the second running back is.
Exactly. I was just going to say, obviously, A.J. Brown clearly is the focal point of that passing game currently.
If you could have Kareem Hunt or David Montgomery, just we're talking about some guys we talked about today. Kareem Hunt or David Montgomery, some low-end wide receiver, running back twos or flexes, along with A.J. Brown. Like, I'm making an assumption here.
Okay.
So, like, let's say he has Kareem Hunt that is going to fill in for that James Conner role. Would I rather have Kareem Hunt and A.J. Brown over James Conner and Juju Smith-Schuster?
I think it's pretty close, to be honest with you. This strikes me as a little bit of shuffling the deck. I think in this case, while sometimes I do lean towards the best player in the deal, James Conner was no slouch in week one. He was really good. He was a top 15 running back. I think I would end up leaning towards keeping James Conner and Juju Smith-Schuster, because while Juju was the Chiefs' leading wideout and did not find the end zone, what if he remained the Chiefs' leading wideout and finds the end zone 8 times this year? I think it's too soon to be selling away Juju Smith-Schuster.
I also think that A.J. Brown, like, you're selling at peak value. Devonta Smith, remember, had zero usage. Yeah. He's going to get involved. Like, he's not going to have this every single week.
I'm freaking out about the Devonta Smith, by the way. Can we just help me recover from the Devonta Smith?
Just one catch. We're not asking for much. Yeah, I know.
I literally was like, did he get hurt? Where did he get hurt? I was watching. Yeah. How did he have
one. Weird one. Again, so much pedigree, right? The guy was the 11th overall pick last year. 10th overall
pick. There is a stud running back behind James Conner that this person has, I think.
You have another number one, and you've got somebody really comparable to James Conner. It's the only way I'm doing that.
By the way, if you have a really, really good running back behind James Conner, like, you would have a little bit of leverage. Say, look, you know what? Like, I've got a really good running back room. Like, you want to pry one away from me? Like, you're going to have to pay because, like, you are more desperate than I am desperate right now, is what it sounds like. So I would hold here.
I'm with you there. All right, Kyle, what's another question we got?
We've got one more question. Gear up this fall with Body Armor Sports Drink, more than a sports drink. And it's from Fonzie, who's always in our chat. Great interaction there. He wants to know to Liz, this question's for Liz, after losing to Kyle in the Listener League, AJ Dillon, weekly top 15 running back, yay or nay? Talk him in or out of it.
Taking shots.
Boy, he's starting off with a slam.
Gosh.
I mean, well, first of all, it was 7 points in how they started AJ Dillon with goose eggs from Cam Akers and Cole Kmet. I would have smoked you, woulda, shoulda, coulda, doesn't matter, but fire, and I took Justin Jefferson number 2 overall. Thank you very much. Anyway, is AJ Dillon a weekly top 15 running back, hot taker, ahead of the curve? Well, before I just stumped for him, it would have been ahead of the curve, but I got there before you because I'm a professional, so now it's just a hot take.
Wow. I love it. I feel like Kyle and Fonzie get the chance to respond. What do you say, Kyle? What do you say to Liz's retort?
I beat her in week 1, and then we've got Packers Bears prime time this week, my team against her team, so I think we'll let the chips fall where they may. We'll see where we're at next Wednesday.
I am calling for a wager here. And Liz, sure. I will let you in on a little secret. Kyle loves cereal.
Yes.
A box of cereal. A box of cereal. Like, yeah, Liz. He is a cereal.
We do have cheap cereal bets around here.
He's a cereal pro.
We're high rollers, Liz. Yeah, don't worry about it. Would you be willing to bet a box of cereal that your Bears will beat Kyle's Packers?
You know what? I will bet a fun pack of
big wagers being made.
A Costco pallet of cereal.
I'm glad I came to work today.
Wow, yeah. Kyle, do you accept or no?
Kyle, are you taking the bet?
And accept it. I'll give her the points too. We'll beat them against the spread. Why not?
Wow.
He knows all the numbers.
I know. Oh, yeah, Liz, so you got to know, like, he is always prepared for everything you throw his way. All right, well, it's officially on. So Kyle and Liz are betting a box of cereal over the Bears and the Packers on Sunday.
And Bears get the points. Bears get the points.
Daniel and Matthew are betting a salary exchange over the Commanders and Lions.
Fingers crossed the Lions come down with a W here, guys. Yeah. That'll be real big for all of us.
Stefania and I'm betting that Jimmy G and Trey Lance are going to end up both winning MVP this year. They're going to split the vote somehow.
I'm just asking for a win and a good day for Trey Lance. Like, that's all I'm asking for. It's not that much.
Liz, thank you so much for joining us. This was so much fun. We will see you again on Sunday/Monday.
Liz.
It'll be fantastic. Make sure you follow her at LizLoza_FF for all of the greatest content. Also, she writes an awesome article called Fantasy Improv that comes out every Friday. Make sure you check that out as well. All right, that's going to do it for us here, friends.
You see what he did right there? She writes an awesome column about fantasy improv. Who does she co-write it with?
DJ Gallo and I.
Oh, okay, got it. Yes, it is a great column. Go check it out.
Third in the billing. It's Liz and then DJ.
Yeah,
like,
no, totally.
Yes.
And you're like down in a little tiny
font. Yes.
Or was it like, what was that, Siegfried and Roy? Weren't they like, that was the old magic act, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It wasn't like one of them like way more prevalent than the other? Like they shared a name.
I think he's thinking of Wham. Where one was way more prevalent.
Oh, I don't know. Whatever. There have been pairs in the past. You're Robin, all right? You're not Batman. Let's just make it clear. How about that?
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. That's what I was getting at. You're Robin.
And then DJ Gallo is Alfred the butler. That's how it works.
Fair enough.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We're going to be back tomorrow, Thursday Night Football, wide receiver cornerback matchup. Me, Field, and Mike breaking down everything that you need to know. We love you guys. Be good people. We'll see you soon. I can't believe you called me Robin.
It's a compliment.
I mean, Robin is pretty cool.
It's not. It's never. No.
I would have taken Catwoman.
No, it's never a compliment to
it's
be
never,
Robin.
Yeah.
No. He'd rather be the Joker. Like, be the bad guy. Don't be Robin.
She's got a smile that'll melt your heart. She's always there to lend a helping hand. Her fantasy knowledge is just the start. Her skills are highly in demand. She's our Bay Area lady out there hustling for us with advice that we really trust. Always there to help. She's not a cone. She's your favorite gal. She's Stefania Bell.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.